this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:32 p.m. on March 13, 2019. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phone. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Shaw, Representative Stutz, my vice chair, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is a confirmation hearing. The speaker has referred five people from the governor's appointment to the Judiciary Committee, and that is the appointment to the Alaska Police Standards Council. Five appointments have been made and referred to this committee, and members have received the resumes of all the folks that have been named, and I believe all appointees were invited to testify, and they will be here either in person or telephone to testify, so I'll open the public hearing. It is my understanding that Ms. Winkleman has joined us in person. Welcome to the House Judiciary Committee, Ms. Winkleman. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Jen Winkleman. I want to thank the committee for their time this afternoon. I know that you are in receipt of my resume and supporting qualifications, but I wanted to give you a brief introduction for the record. I am a fourth-generation Alaskan, born and raised in Fairbanks. My family, we actually relocated to Juneau in 2016 when I was promoted to Chief Probation Officer of Region 2. And for reference, Region 2 is Fairbanks North and then Juneau in Southeast. So I graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks with a degree in Justice and Paralegal Studies, and I've been with the Department of Corrections for 18 years, both in the institution and the field. I was appointed to the Director of Probation and Parole in December. I am married. My husband is an Athabascan who was born in the village of Shagluck on the Anoka River. He retired in 2016 from the corrections, so collectively we have a lot of corrections experience in our family. We have two beautiful sons who attend school here in Juneau. Two questions that I answered for the Senate that I would like to share with you is why I would like the position and then what value I would bring to the council. So why I would like the position essentially is that I believe this council is incredibly important to maintain professionalism and integrity within our law enforcement community. And this professionalism, in my mind, definitely correlates to public safety. I once heard an educator say at one point in my career I sold graduation supplies, and so I would attend graduation ceremonies quite frequently, and I heard an educator say that one of the most important factors in job satisfaction was how much your job affects the well-being of others. And so I can say that as a probation and parole officer for the last 18 years, I definitely worked hard every day hoping to make that affect that well-being of others and staff. When I was appointed to the Director of Probation and Parole, I was presented with the opportunity for this council, and I saw this opportunity as an honor and a privilege to serve in a bigger capacity. I call it outside of my comfort zone of just knowing corrections. So, as a leader in corrections, I have shared that in order to successfully promote public safety, we cannot operate in a silo and that we need each other and the community to be part of this. I recognize that for various reasons, the state of Alaska in general has encountered difficulty with recruitment and retention. These difficulties seem to be parallel across all law enforcement agencies, and my ability to serve on this council would allow me to have an insight into the opportunities that we can afford and or offer to other folks to produce and maintain highly trained officers to protect our great state. On the other side of this, the council would allow me the opportunity to help restore faith in those that have maybe have lost faith in the system because cases of misconduct are brought to our attention on the council. I believe in the work of peace officers, but I also believe it's imperative that there's a check and balance out there because of the latitude and authority that is given by the sheer nature of the position. So the other question that I was asked was what value would I bring to the council, and to share with you guys, not only will I bring a corrections viewpoint to the council, that I can also offer a broad statewide perspective. When I talked of my Region 2, I have managed offices all the way up in Utagavik, up in Barrow, all the way down to our southernmost city of Ketchikan. This responsibility as the chief probation officer gave me some exposure and knowledge of the strengths and struggles that exist in regard to resources, staffing, and obviously the unique nature of many cases in Alaska and how they can vary from community to community. I have seen and been required to work together with whatever law enforcement agency is in the actual community. Sometimes that's VPSOs, sometimes that's village, and sometimes that's municipal police departments, or AST. It's imperative that APSC agencies work together on a daily basis regarding everything from training to day-to-day assistance in the field, and this teamwork is imperative to accomplish an independent mission. I can share that while I have not lived in a community in rural Alaska, I have visited countless times, and I can bring that experience to the council. Another value I bring is that I'm a naturally born problem solver. I like to think of new ways to do business, and I love working as a team. So this ties into my rural experience, and that I think it's absolutely critical to work as a team, especially in rural Alaska. I look forward to sharing my network and communication talent with the council, and these are relationships that I have developed over my years in this field, and I intend to bring them forward with the council. While I have not served on the council, I definitely reviewed the mission and core services, and I feel that my experience and personality would be an asset to the council. I share this that, you know, I managed a caseload of felons for many years. What this value is to me is that I'm not sometimes afraid to tackle tough decisions, sensitive decisions, and this may mean an arrest or removing somebody from their home to help a victim or a child. These are decisions I never made lightly. As a supervisor of staff from Barrow to Ketchikan, I have listened and empathized wholeheartedly with different challenges and opportunities that staff and community members face in these areas.
And I would just note that Representative Wool has joined us. You can keep going.
I feel that I have been fair and impartial in making decisions that impact our staff and communities, and I can consider facts and successfully formulate decisions based on big picture and ultimately the safety of our community. In closing, I guess I want to state that while I know that the career field is always ever evolving, as everything with technology and tools of the trade, the one thing that remains steady to me is the integrity of our law enforcement and producing good, highly trained officers. So I believe the council is in place to do that. And again, I emphasize that check and balance for our law enforcement community. I know my statewide experience within corrections would bring a huge value to the council and ultimately the state. And I thank you for your time, and I'm here for any questions.
Questions from Ms. Winkleman, Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Ms. Winkleman, for being willing to serve on the council. Is the position that you're on, is this one of the three designated correction seats, or has that designation changed? It's been a while since I've looked at how those are designated.
So through the chair to Representative Cobb, I believe it is a designated corrections seat. I am replacing the prior corrections representative on it, so I'm almost positive. It's very new to me.
Okay. Well, you've got a former executive director of the council right here, and I was on the council for 5 years and enjoyed my service with the colleagues there at that time. Can you tell the committee what you see as maybe the top challenge for training, whether it's on the correction side or the police officer side of things right now that you see, or it may be more towards probation officers, but what do you see are the top training challenges right now?
So through the chair to Representative Kopp, I think that one of the biggest challenges from my perspective, and again, it kind of goes to my rural experience and seeing what staffing from the rural communities to hubs, a lot of times it has to do with the budget and getting folks the ability to train and have the opportunity to come into hub areas to participate in training. I think some of it is funding, and I think that some of it is getting the word out through the council of what's available in different areas so that folks can participate in it, essentially. I think there's a lot of training opportunities out there. I just don't know that the word has been spread as well as it could. And that is, I see when I receive training emails and things like that now, that it's that bigger picture, that it's not just going to my corrections staff, but it's going to everybody and trying to find ways to get folks into to be able to participate.
Okay. Thank you for that. How well do you think the pass-through of the police training surcharge is going through to the council. You're familiar with that. It's the way training funds are come to the council. It's a surcharge on misdemeanors, felonies. It's also a surcharge on moving violations. And there, I have heard recently that from different police agencies and correctional facilities around Alaska that surcharge money has not been passed through from the state to the council for training purposes as effectively as it has been in the past, that maybe it's getting lost in the process. So maybe, since you aren't familiar, maybe in your service as a council member, it's one of the first things you could bring up, because it's directly relevant to training. And a lot of these agencies, they really rely on that to conduct annual training or quarterly training, things like that.
So through the chair to Representative Cobb, I was not aware. I'm familiar with what you're talking about in regard to the surcharge, but not realizing that that's where it went. So I will definitely have it on my radar to look into.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Just curious, so the person that you are replacing, was that person a deputy director or higher in the Department of Corrections?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the concerns that's been brought to my attention deals with veterans being hired into law enforcement positions in Alaska. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how that process should go forward. I know there are individuals who spent, you know, up to 20 years or more in a federal law enforcement career here in the military in Alaska, or mostly in Alaska, who then are, for various reasons, don't qualify to be eligible for law enforcement positions at the state level. I'm curious if you would favor creating sort of an alternate route for them to be hired in lieu of their military experience, for example.
So through the chair to Representative Eastman, I, not being familiar with that, I, much like my answer to Representative Kopp, that is something I would definitely look into. As a hiring manager for corrections, and only my experience being hiring manager with probation and parole, I know that we were certainly looking into it, and I would put that on a broader perspective and put it on my radar, much like I said that. Interesting that you've brought the concern forward, and know that I would definitely be looking into that as well.
Sure. And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Another concern that some constituents have brought to me is that certain homeschool graduates are right now required, after they complete their homeschool program, if it's not affiliated with a public school, they're now required to go and get a GED before they can even apply for a law enforcement position. What are your thoughts on that?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I was not familiar with that, and I would have to look into that again on a broader perspective to see what the requirements are and why that was put into place.
Thank you.
Other questions from Ms. Winkleman? I don't see any. I would just note you've got I think she's the supervisor of adult probation here in Juneau, whose name has just escaped me. Yes, I met her just in the last couple of weeks. Does very good work, and she's a credit to your work as a supervisor to have somebody of that skill working in the probation department.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I don't see any other questions for Ms. Winkleman. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
The remaining appointees are on the phone, so I would note to all of you, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone, because speakerphone sound quality is consistently very poor, and then I'm always interrupting, saying, please get off the speakerphone. So, Mr. Dura, are you online?
This is Chief Dutra.
Yes. Mr. Dura, this is Chairman Matt Clayman. You can proceed with your testimony. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Well, my name is Steve Dutra, and my last name is spelled D-U-T-R-A, and I want to thank the committee for allowing me to testify today. Just a little bit about myself. I know you have my resume, but I moved to Juneau, Alaska about 22 years ago with the intention of becoming a police officer in Alaska. I attended the Sitka Police Academy. I was a self-pay, and then after my graduation, I sent out letters to every department in the state, and was lucky enough to be hired in a rural Yakutat, Department of Public Safety. I worked there for 3 years. I had quite a lot of experience doing everything from jail guard to transports to even representing the district attorney's office in court. So it was quite an experience, and it's one that I'll cherish. I moved to North Pole after that to attend college. I attended UAF, where I received my bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a minor in communications. I started working for North Pole Police Department as a patrol officer. I rose up through the ranks of sergeant, and I was a lieutenant, and now I'm the chief of police. I've been so almost 7 years now. I'm married. I have two great kids, 13 and 14 years old. My wife is from Yakutat. I've coached baseball. I was a Cub Scout leader for Weebelos for 3 years. I'm very much into our community these days. We do I do lots of programs such as Guys Read. I read to grade boys at least 2 or 3 times a year. We consistently host Coffee with a Cop with all the local agencies in the interior. That gets us in touch with our folks and constituents. It gives people a chance to talk to us and ask questions. I was instrumental in bringing Alice to the interior schools. I'm pretty proud of that. We just kicked off our first active shooter exercise in an elementary school, and that was about a year and a half project. I'm super super stoked about that. I am a board member for the Alaska Chiefs Association, and I guess the next thing I wanted to answer was why I wanted to be on the council, and I felt now I had reached a point in my career where I could give back and I could volunteer and help out, and plus I thought it was a good opportunity for North Pole, being a smaller to mid-sized agency, being represented on the council and having our voice heard. Since the slot came open, I was asked if I would consider it, and I did. I think what value I bring to the Standards Council is I'm pretty level-headed. I'm a reasonable person. I have a lot of experience that I can draw upon of working up through the ranks and working in rural Alaska. I'm pretty open-minded, and I really believe in upholding the standards and the integrity of law enforcement, because it's critical to our image and everything we do, and it's the battle that the chiefs fight every day, making sure that our folks are maintaining high integrity and performing at the top level. So I don't know, that's about all we have right now.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Mr. Dutra? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. And could you just, for the sake of the committee, could you let us know which seat you would be filling on the council?
The police chief.
Thank you. And follow up.
Representative Eastman.
And kind of related to some earlier questions, wanted to know, through the chair, were you aware that it is right now, in at least one respect, more difficult to become a law enforcement hire in Alaska than it is to apply to and be accepted to one of our service military academies because of the GED requirement? What thoughts do you have on that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman. I'm not familiar with that. I certainly could look into it, but I know that the standards there is required for a GED or a high school diploma, but I don't know much about the military.
All right, follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I was curious to know if you have any thoughts on the current way by which military and former military are eligible to apply to a law enforcement position here in Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman. Well, we encourage military folks. We have two military bases, one on each side of our city, and we reach out to them on a regular basis and recruit. I know there are some requirements that the Standards Council requires of, like, especially the military and the security forces folks. We have noticed in the past that a lot of their training isn't reciprocal. It isn't generally accepted by the council. It'd be something that'd be interesting in having a discussion about, so that make it a little easier transition for those folks who've had 20 years experience in law enforcement. So, I definitely endorse that.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions, and I don't have questions myself, Mr. Dutra. Thank you very much for joining us today and for providing your testimony and participating in this proceeding. Next in line would be Rebecca Heyman. Ms. Heyman, are you online?
Hello, this is Rebecca. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Okay. My name is Rebecca Heyman. Last name is spelled H-A-M-O-N. Often I get questions about whether I'm related to Governor Heyman, but we're not. It's a different spelling. My history is we came to Alaska about 20 years ago as my husband had just finished graduate school. We had a brand new baby and we needed our first real job, and we came out to King Salmon to work. My husband was to work for the Park Service, and we sort of fell in love with the life in Alaska and living in rural Alaska, and we have been out here ever since. I have two children. My older child is a daughter. Her name is Gwyneth, and she's 20. And I have a younger one, Cedric, and he is 18. They've both become involved in aviation in our part of the world, and this has been their home their whole lives, and so they are definitely Alaskan. For the last 12 years, I've worked as an advocate for an agency called SAFE, and we provide advocacy to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and my role with this agency is I am a village and legal advocate for all the villages that are served under the Naknek District Court. And so that involves the three little villages that are close to where I live, plus about 15 other villages in the Lake and Peninsula Borough. As part of my job, I try to be a team player with a lot of the other agencies that work to help victims. And so often I'm working with our local borough police and the Alaska State Troopers. I'm working with VPSOs in some of the other smaller villages. I work with OCS and with our Child Advocacy Center over in Dillingham. And I'm also involved in the school. I'm a school board member, and so I'm allowed to come into the school and teach healthy relationships classes and dating violence prevention to our teens and middle schoolers. I feel like that's a really good step in prevention to start talking about these things early in their relationship choosing time of their life. I'm deeply involved in the community in many other ways, too many to mention, and you actually have my resume, so you can get a look at that. I feel as far as another piece of history, I've been serving on this council for 8 years already. This will be my third appointment. And I think I'm serving as a public member, and I feel like what I bring to the council is a real rural perspective. I have a lot of experience in what it's like working in a small place where we have to be creative to get our jobs done, because the services that others might consider normal are not necessarily available to us. And that we have a small teams and limited resources, so we have to work closely together. From the rural perspective, I've always felt it's very important that we have a high quality police force, because trust between the community and our police officers has been broken in the past, and it's been difficult to rebuild that. And I feel like that's a very high priority for me and for others in our state, and that people in all areas of Alaska deserve to be served by public servants that care about their state and care about the law and do the very best at their jobs. So that's kind of what I bring to it. I feel like another piece of value that I can bring to the council now is sort of history of being on the council. I believe I'm one of the longest serving on the council now. And so I can kind of bring some perspective about the decisions we've made over the last 8 years and some of the changes that have happened during that time. I think that's all I have for the moment.
Thank you very much. Questions for Ms. Heyman, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. Ms. Heyman, thank you for coming before us today. In your 8 years of serving on the council, I'm just curious, have you formed an opinion on, what are some of the challenges that are currently impacting recruitment to law enforcement here in the state, and what, if anything, can the council be doing that they aren't already doing to improve our recruitment numbers?
It's hard to say what exactly the council could do. I know that different parts of the state have different issues with hiring Personally, out in the bush, we anybody who would be willing to come out in the bush would probably be hired, because it is so hard to find people willing to come out and live in a remote area like ours. And from my perspective out here, it's been very difficult, even if you are able to recruit people, to encourage them to stay. I don't know if the council can affect this, but overall, one of the things that I feel it drives people out of our communities is the high cost of living and the feeling that maybe their children don't have all the resources they could have. So families tend to move on to greener pastures elsewhere. And I feel like the council, one of the ways that our hands have been tied is we have been unable to help out with training as much as we'd like financially in some of these small places that would like to hire and send people to training. Now bear a lot of that, the burden of that, the financial burden of training their people. And I would like it if the council could help out more, but financially that's been tight.
Thank you.
Representative Cobb?
Just a comment.
Go ahead. A comment or question?
Yeah.
go ahead, Representative Cobb.
Hi, Rebecca. Chuck Cobb here. It's good to see you're still serving on the council, and I just did not want to let this opportunity to go by to let the members know that when I was with Public Safety out in Bristol Bay, Rebecca was my first victim advocate on two very significant felony assaults, and she is a consummate professional in managing people through the process of that trauma and keeping them steady for a trial. And anyway, I was super just privileged to work with her, and the minute I had a chance to recommend her to the council, she was appointed, I think, by Governor Parnell, and I think she's been the only person with a victim advocate background that's ever served on the council, and I'm glad to see that you're still serving, and my wife still hasn't forgot how to can silver salmon, thank to you, so good. Thank you for your
Any
service.
Questions for Ms. Heyman? I would just note, just listening to your testimony and looking through your resume, you have really not only gone to the rural Alaska and embraced the entire community and lifestyle, but your continued work in terms of public service is really quite impressive. I know personally, I always said I would only serve on one board at a time, and you're on four, and so that says a lot. And then I also realize that in your professional life, you're also helping to make sure folks in your community are getting access to dental care, which is no small undertaking, even though that's what you're getting paid to do. It's all great stuff. So thank you for your service, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. Next online, we have we should have Mr. Burke Waldron. Mr. Waldron. And if you could, or can you hear us okay?
Yes, sir.
And if you could go ahead and state your name, and in addition, tell us which seat you are being nominated to, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, community members. my name is Burke Waldron. That's spelled W-A-L-D-R-O-N. I've been appointed to fill one of the chief of police chairs on the council. I'd like to start with a little bit about myself. I do know that you have my history statement and my resume. I moved to Alaska in 1987, shortly after graduating from high school. I attended the University of Alaska Fairbanks and studied wildlife management there. I was hired by the Department of Public Safety in 1990 and began a 25-year journey with public safety at that time. In my 25 years, I served approximately 14 years with the Division of Alaska State Troopers. I'm sorry, with the Division of Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and about 11 years with the Division of Alaska State Troopers. I held field level and command level positions in both divisions. So, upon my retirement, I had a pretty well-rounded feeling and knowledge of the operations of the Department of Public Safety. After retiring from Department of Public Safety, I did take a couple of years off. I dipped my gold pan in a few creeks and I also tried out some big game guiding, another lifelong dream of mine. I did enjoy both those opportunities, but life circumstances sometimes change, and I found myself longing to go back into public service, and so I was hired at first as a temporary police chief at the city of Bethel, and then appointed to the full-time police chief in the city of Bethel, and I've been doing that now for about a year and 9 months. Why I'd like to serve on the council, I think my experience as basically a game warden, a state trooper, and now a police chief in rural Alaska. I think I bring a pretty broad perspective to the council, and I think it's nice to have also a rural voice from Western Alaska on the council as well, because we have some unique challenges out here, both in hiring and finding qualified people and people that meet the council standards. I also wish to serve because, you know, in today's world, public perception I feel is changing on law enforcement, and I'd like to be a part of how the council merges and shifts the paradigm along with the public's perception of law enforcement. And again, I think my broad perspective with my different assignments will help assist in that. I also feel that the integrity and transparency in law enforcement is so critical, and that helps also with that public perception. And I'd like to participate in that process as well.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Waldron, Representative Eastman?
Thank you, and through the chair, Mr. Waldron. As a member of law enforcement, I'm curious what your assessment is of recruitment for law enforcement in our state. Are we as successful as we need to be, or are we not? What are your impressions on why or why not?
Well, recruitment's an ongoing battle for me. As part of my time with public safety, I also worked in the recruitment unit, and it was certainly a struggle at times for Department of Public Safety as well. I don't feel it's a statewide problem. I feel it's at a minimum a North American problem. I've even had conversations with Canadian agencies that also have recruitment issues or at least difficulties finding good, strong, qualified candidates. I think there's a large variety of reasons for that, some of which and there's many more out there I'm sure I haven't even considered. So it's an ongoing problem. It continues to be a problem. And as a hiring manager now, many of us are fiscally constrained. That's going to continue in the future, it certainly appears, and just need to look outside the box for some different ways to provide opportunities to people where they'll be interested in applying and joining the law enforcement team here in Alaska.
I follow up.
Representative Eastman.
And follow through the chair. And I'm curious, is there anything with as monumental a problem as North America is there anything that the council can do specifically that might help address the problem of recruitment going forward?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I think having a direct impact may be difficult as the council. I think indirectly over time we can, by having high standards and maintaining standards and high standards and, polishing up and shining up some of the brass in law enforcement and improving our public image, over time I think that certainly could have an impact.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Shaw.
Yes, Mr. Waldron, this is Representative Laddie Shaw. I'm just curious if the training that you got at the academy 29 years ago was a benefit to you being the chief of police today.
Through the chair, Representative Shaw, most definitely it was. I I wouldn't be the person I am today if it wasn't for those 3 months that I spent in Sitka and the people that were, that you being one of them, that drastically had an impact on the man I became and how I've lived the rest of my life up until this point.
Thank you, Burke. That was just a point of levity more than anything.
We did hear the rumor that you were pretty good at washing the dishes at the Academy, Representative. Any other questions for Mr. Waldron? Hearing and seeing none, Mr. Waldron, thank you very much for joining us today. Our last person that's been nominated to the Police Standards Council is Joseph White. Mr. White, are you online?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. Please go ahead and state your name for the record. Let us know what a position on the Police Standards Council that you have been nominated for, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Joseph White. I've been nominated for a chief of police position on the council. I apologize in advance. I'm in Seattle right now, so my phone is kind of in and out. I think I've heard most of the questions, but I'd like to state just a brief history of myself. I know you have my resume, and I was born and raised in Ketchikan. I attended Ketchikan High School and then Kodiak High School. After that, I went to college at UAS, and I graduated in 1992 from University of West Anchorage. I self-paid my way through the Sitka Academy in 95 and got picked up by Ketchikan in 96, and I've been there almost 23 years. I guess one of the reasons I'm looking for a position on the Alaska Police Standards Council is I feel like the council is critical for public safety in Alaska. I think that they are the guardians of standards, and we need to ensure that our law enforcement, corrections, probation officers have the highest standards in the nation. It takes one incident with one person to tarnish a whole reputation of a whole department or profession. So I feel like, first and foremost, the council is there to keep the profession in a good light. Secondly, I believe that training our officers is huge. I think highly trained, professionally trained officers have more of the tools needed to be competent in today's society with all the changes that are coming forth. Ill-trained officers are a liability to their department, to their community, to the state, to the profession. If they're highly trained, we have less problems internally. We see less cases getting dismissed for various reasons. With better casework comes safer communities. That's kind of all I had, and I'd be willing for questions. Thank you for giving me the time to testify today.
Thank you very much. Representative Eastman has a question.
Thank you.
Treating everyone equally.
I do my best. Chief, I wanted to ask, since you've been on the council a little bit longer than some of the others before us today, kind of a holdover from a previous administration, which is very good. I'm curious. It surprised me when I learned that you could be a homeschool graduate in Talkeetna, my district, and you could apply to a place like West Point and go off and have a military law enforcement career there. But if you didn't have a GED, you couldn't apply to be a police officer in Wasilla, also near my district. And I was just curious if you could help me understand why that was, or any thoughts you might have on that. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I was unaware that was the case. I haven't looked into the homeschooling and the equivalent of a homeschool degree versus a GED. I do know that Alaska Police Standards requires a GED as a basic entry level. And I do know that homeschooling and alternative schooling is becoming very popular, so I think maybe it is time to take a step back and look at maybe more less conventional ways of schooling and how that's going to impact putting these people into the workforce. Because as has been said before me here, recruitment is a huge issue. Getting qualified, interested people, the right people in these positions is huge. And I would really hate to have a good qualified person that gets passed over simply because they don't have the GED, but they have the equivalent that wasn't recognized. So I think it would probably be worthwhile to step back and take a look at that and see how we can make those mesh.
Follow-up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Another concern that was brought to my attention dealt with those who are leaving working in federal law enforcement on JBEAR and are finding themselves ineligible to apply to law enforcement in Alaska because you know, the academy they went through didn't have enough hours of this or that or some other administrative regulation. And I was curious to know if that's something that you've seen as a member of the council or if that's just not a concern that's reached you.
I have not had that concern come to me yet. I do know that we have hired lateral officers from down south, and we go to the lengths to make sure that their academy training, their hours of training, will be transferred over to Alaska before we make them a good job offer. I want to make sure they understand that this is the difference between a two-week refresher academy or a 16-week basic academy again. So somebody who – we've hired two officers lately that have had 20-plus years experience down south, and that's something we need to make sure they're – credits are going to transfer over for Alaska standards. I don't know if all the military schooling would transfer straight into civilian law enforcement. It's a little bit different, but I think it's easily attainable with some modifications.
Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Chief White, having been on the council, can you tell me how many of the seats are for police chiefs on the council?
How many seats are for police chiefs? I believe maybe four, I believe.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't see any follow-up. I do have one question after taking some lessons from Representative Shaw. Can you tell me things you've learned in your high school career as a student-athlete, and who were your great teachers when you were a student-athlete?
Student-athlete, yeah. I had some great teachers as a student-athlete. I started when I was in high school in Ketchikan. I played my first 2 years of basketball there, traveled throughout all of Southeast.
Who was the coach of that team?
My coach back then was Mr. Ortez.
And I assume he told you taught you as much about basketball as anyone could ever teach.
He taught me a lot about basketball. He was a great instructor of the game. I did have fond memories of that. My sophomore year, Coach Ortez was a joy to be with. And, in fact, I still enjoy friendship with him today. So, yeah.
All right. And I gather he was also another member of your family later was under his guidance as a coach.
Yes, my wife was on his track team, if you believe, when she was in high school. So, yeah. He's been involved with our life since, I don't know when I was in high school, 81, 82, someplace back then.
All right. Those are the only questions I had. I just wanted to make sure that the stories in Ketchikan were true.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Mr. White?
Representative Ledoux. I'll wait long on that. Did I hear you say that you also attended school in Kodiak?
I did. I did my first 2 years of high school. I was born and raised in Ketchikan. We relocated to Kodiak for my junior senior year, so I played basketball and went to school, finished out my high school career in Kodiak.
So did you ever meet any of the Ledoux in Kodiak that were in the school system?
Only those that were coaches, no other one else. All right. I don't see any other questions, Mr. White. Thank you for taking the time and humoring us with some questions about your life as a student athlete. We will now move on to public testimony. If you're on the phone, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone so we get good sound quality. I don't see anyone else on the list for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to provide public testimony about these nominations for the Police Standards Council? Hearing and seeing no one, we're going to close public testimony. I think we've actually got several of them, nominees are off the line, so I think everyone's got all the questions asked that they had. That brings us to final comments, and we'll go around with members can have final comments if they wish. Representative Stutes?
No, I just want to thank all the applicants for applying. Sounds like we have some good quality people. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Well, thank you. I'd just say I hope they do well. I think it's important council. I think we've had some good discussion.
Representative Wool. Representative Kopp.
Yeah, just thank the applicants for applying, and I think Representative Eastman prompted several to look at some of the education requirements, make sure we don't have any artificial impediments there. I'm encouraged by the great crew we have wanting to serve on the council.
Representative Shaw.
And just for the benefit of the committee, I'd like to go over the APSC positions. There's four chief positions: Commissioner of Public Safety or designee, Commissioner of Corrections or designee, two persons in the public sector, and then one corrections administrator, and that fulfills the council. And as the former executive director for the Alaska Police Standards Council, I'd like to say that these folks are highly qualified. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. Representative Ledoux.
I concur with Representative Shaw. These individuals are eminently qualified, and thank you all for your willingness to serve.
And I want to thank everyone on the committee for participating in the hearing, and I share all the comments that have been shared. Representative Ledoux.
The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Stephen Dutra, Rebecca Heyman, Burke Waldron, Joseph White, Jennifer Winkleman to the Police Standards Council. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
The names will be forwarded to the joint session after we adjourn, or as we go forward with the next matter, be sure to sign the committee confirmation report. Is it a single report, or are there five separate sheets? One report only. Our second and final order of business today is House Bill 77, Number of Superior Court Judges, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Nancy Mead, General Counsel to the Alaska Court System. Ms. Mead, if you could please come forward, identify yourself for the record, although I think we all know who you are, and you may begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. Thank you for hearing this bill today. Very briefly, what this bill accomplishes, the only thing it accomplishes, is to increase the allotted number of Superior Court judges by two, and specifying that the additional seats will serve in the third judicial district. With this bill, to be more precise, the court system would be able to take the two already existing district court seats, one in Homer and one in Valdez, and instead fill those seats with two Superior Court judges. One thing I would like to state is that this HB 77 was introduced by the House Rules Committee by request of the court system. We rarely do that, but this is one of the times we need to have a statutory change that affects the administration of justice, and this then is a priority for the Supreme Court, which is why I'm here today. So why did the Supreme Court request the statutory change? Well, what we have now in Homer and Valdez are the only court locations in the state that are served with only a district court judge. That is, there are last remaining single judge locations where the judge is not a Superior Court judge. I know that this committee is probably well familiar with the fact that Superior Court judges have original jurisdiction over all trial court issues that arise in the state, whereas district court judges have only limited jurisdiction. Specifically, Superior Court judges can handle felonies, child in need of aid cases, domestic relations cases, juvenile delinquency, civil cases with an amount in excess of $100,000, probate cases. But district court judges, their limited jurisdiction means that they can only handle misdemeanors, not felonies, cannot handle child in need of aid or divorces or custody, no mental commitments, civil cases with a lower dollar amount, and they do handle other matters as well. But it's really because the Superior Court judge can handle everything filed in those locations that we want to make this change. And right now, the timing for this request is ideal, which is why we're here. The district court judge in Valdez was recently appointed to the Juneau Superior Court, which was a seat, by the way, that the legislature created last year. And so the seat is empty right now. And the district court judge in Homer has announced her retirement effective the end of June. So if this bill passes this year and those judgeships get upgraded, we will be able to advertise those seats as Superior Court judges instead of district court judges. And the reason that we want to change the status quo for Homer and Valdez is really because the way cases in those two places have been handled has been problematic for years. In Homer, the district court judge, appointed by Governor Murkowski, handles the regular caseload that a district court judge would, but all the superior court filings that come to Homer, any felony case, any divorce case, any child in need of aid, has to be covered by a Kenai judge traveling down there. And their regular default schedule is to travel to Homer about 1 week a month to cover those cases. So this doesn't seem like it is a sustainable or effective way to handle the cases that get filed in Homer. And it also has costs that go with it. So this is not efficient. It takes time for the Kenai judges to travel. It takes time for people to process travel and pay for travel, and they have to change their calendars in Kenai, et cetera. So that has been happening for a while, but we really think that it is not an ideal setup for handling the cases in the peninsula. Valdez is a similar situation, although not exactly the same as Homer. We've had a district court judge there handling misdemeanors and a typical district court caseload there for years. And again, that position is vacant now because that judge was appointed to a different seat. If the court system's authorized to fill that seat with a superior court judge, that judge could handle all those felonies, divorces, child in need of aid, et cetera. And what has been happening in Valdez is that the appointed district court judge has been able to handle some of the superior court matters with special appointments from the Supreme Court. But that is really because of that individual having the qualifications, experience, and willingness to handle those cases. And if we're able to fill that only with a district court judge, we would not have somebody who could handle those cases, and we would go to having judges come from Palmer or Kodiak or elsewhere to cover that caseload. And the last thing I'll say, because I think you're mostly familiar with what we're seeking, is that the Supreme Court has explored many other ways to cover Homer and Valdez. There is extensive video conferencing between those courts, between Homer and Kenai and Valdez and other locations like Glen Allen and Cordova, but you just can't do all court proceedings by video, and so there still is a lot of travel. We thought about asking for a full Superior Court judge in those locations, but that is quite expensive, and this seems to be the opportunity to do it at a particularly thrifty and cost-effective way, because the new judge would sit in the very same chair and use the same courtroom and staff as the district court judge would. So with that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Questions for Ms. Mead. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. I was just curious, Ms. Mead, is the number of district court judges, is that set in statute somewhere else, or how is that determined?
The Alaska court system has the number of district court judges established in our administrative rules. Through the chair.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the lines of Representative Eastman's question, I guess not being that familiar with the system. So the number of district judges is set in administrative code, I think you just said. What did you say?
Through the chair to Representative Wool. It's in the Alaska Rules of Court, the Administrative Rules of Court, and I'll modify my answer in a moment after I hear your question.
So so superior judges, is that number limited as well? And the difference between a district judge and a superior judge, besides pay, I assume is they have to be appointed Superior Court, and there's experience and requirements. I mean, how does that work? And also, do superior judges ever hear lesser cases? Do they go down a bracket, so to speak?
Through the chair to Representative Wool. I should be more clear that the number of district court judges is set in our court rule. There's a statute on it that says the court can amend it from time to time. So that is a bit more precise of an answer. So, for example, last year with the Juneau change that was similar, after the bill passed, we amend our court rule for district judges, bringing it down by one, and this would be down by two. So that's a little bit more of a precise answer to that. The Superior Court judges' qualifications for office are generally similar to a district court's qualification for office. They may have, you know, a longer residency requirement or something like that. The Superior Court judges are chosen the same way as district court judges. That is, people apply. They go through a process in the Judicial Council where the bar is surveyed. People are able to make comments. They receive a score from the bar survey. They get interviewed extensively, looked into, and then the most qualified applicants are nominated for the seat to the governor, and the governor then chooses. So it's the same for superior and district court. We do, because of the difference in caseload, get different types of applicants sometimes for the two different courts. Some people prefer the kind of fast case, high turnover, misdemeanor caseload in district court, and some attorneys who apply feel they're better suited for the cases in superior court that often last much longer. There's a lot more writing and opinion writing and law clerk use and research involved. So they're kind of a different caseload. Some people just want to be a judge and will apply for either, certainly. And then your last question was whether Superior Court judges ever do district court work. That depends on location. For these two seats, we would plan that they would indeed keep covering all that district court caseload that district court has been covering, and also be able to cover the Superior Court caseload. And we anticipate that will work fine in those areas because the Superior Court caseload isn't as large in Homer and Valdez as, for example, Anchorage or one of the other courts. But they would have to kind of be a jack of all trades in those two locations.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair. So a Superior Court judge can hear a district court case. A district court judge cannot hear a type of crime that goes to Superior Court. If I'm understanding that right, looks like you're nodding. So I guess when talked about different requirements and lawyers that apply to be a judge, they may go for district, some may go for superior. Did district judges apply to be a superior judge? And I'm guessing that's yes, but you can answer that for me.
Through the chair to Representative Wool, sometimes many are perfectly happy doing the job they have as a district court judge. I think a lot of people think that judges are always wanting to move up a level, and that is not necessarily true. It's a very different job at the different levels, and some people are well suited to one level but not another level.
So, an interesting little tidbit of information about the judiciary. Our current Chief Justice served as the Valdez District Court judge, and then applied for and was named to the Kodiak Superior Court. And from the Kodiak Superior Court, he then applied for to become a judge on the Court of Appeals and was named to the Court of Appeals. And then he applied from the Court of Appeals to be to the Supreme Court. And he was recently elected by the court as the current Chief Justice. And I think he's the first judge in Alaska history to have served at all four levels of the court system. Any follow-up, Representative Wool?
No, thank you for that brief history as well.
Representative Ledoux.
So there are a number of places now in which there is a single court, a single court judge, and that judge hears both superior court cases and misdemeanor. District court cases, and I assume that the court has had experience with those single court judges, and that it's worked out well.
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux. Yes, in places like Kotzebue, we have one judge. They're all superior court judges, though. These are our last two that are just district. Kotzebue is just a superior court judge. Nome, I want to say, is a Superior Court Judge, Dillingham, Sitka. So yes, and yes, it has worked out well, which is why the Supreme Court wants to replicate that model in these other two locations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Now, you mentioned that these are the only standalone district courts currently, I think if I understood you correctly.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's a okay way to put it, yes.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And once this change goes forward and say this bill does become law, I assume there's going to be a decrement to the number of district judges, and if that's the case, how many district judges would we have left, and how long does that process generally take to amend the rule of court?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, yes, if this bill, once this bill is signed, the court rules attorney would recommend that administrative rule be decreased by the two seats, and that would go to the Supreme Court. That happens very quickly when there is a non-controversial administrative type rule change like this, as in it could be within a month, and she will have it prepared if this bill passes the legislature for the date of the to coincide with the effective date of the statutory change.
Why is it to say sometimes they can change court rules faster than we can pass legislation?
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. That would not surprise me in the slightest. And when that change does go through, how many district judges would we have left in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, we have 22 now, and we would have 20 after this change goes through.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp, I think you had a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Mead, you said that the number of judges was set in the court rule but not statute, but actually they are set in the statute, right? 2210-220 does list the number of.
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, yes, I tried to correct myself. There is something in statute, but the end of that statute says, and the Supreme Court can change it from time to time as they see fit, and that is what happens.
Okay, that must be in another section of the bill we don't have. So question then, follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopp, go
ahead. On the court rule, normally it takes a two-thirds vote to change a court rule. I realize the court is asking for this, but does it still take a two-thirds vote of the legislature to change the court rule?
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, the court rule is an administrative rule, which is different from the rules of practice and procedure that are covered by the constitutional provision that says the legislature needs a two-thirds vote to amend those court rules.
Okay.
And so through the chair, we do not think you need a two-thirds vote to amend that type of court rule.
Just be a simple majority then, so.
Through the chair, the legislature wouldn't have a role in amending that administrative rule. The legislature can amend this statute, and just like with many, many bills, we then go back and look at our court rules and see if court rules need changing.
Representative Cabal, but I think the interesting issue that you're touching on is that the court has authority to change its rules on its own, and as part of the separations of power notion, the court can change its own rules kind of whenever it sees fit to do so, and that's part of its inherent authority as the Supreme Court, not anybody less than any, not a lower court. The legislature, if we get enough votes together, we can essentially tell the court, we're changing your rule and you got to live with it. And that's that two-thirds requirement to deal with that separation of powers issue. But they can change their rules. We can do things and not change court rules. They can do it on their own, or if we choose to tell them we're changing the rules, we have to have the two-thirds vote to do so. But go ahead with your follow-up.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess my point here being that there's no point for them to change the rule if they don't have the votes for the statute to change. Separation of powers. Clear as a bell. So the one thing I have a question on the fiscal note, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
Fiscal note is reflective, is that of a single judge's salary, or is that of reflective of both positions?
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, that is for both positions. Should this bill pass, that would be the net impact, which is the difference in salary and benefits for two positions, as between district court and superior court, and then we netted back out the travel costs we would save from the judges that have been traveling to those locations to cover.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Mead. And one final question, Mr.
Representative Kopp.
Is this the same thing we did for the Juneau-based position here when we upgraded it to Superior Court, I think last year?
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, yes, the legislature did pass that bill last year. It was signed into law, and we have filled that seat with the district court judge from Valdez who applied.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. And I was just curious, if the court were to, regardless of whether this bill passes, the court were to, say, add the number of district court judges from 22 to, say, 24, I know they have the authority that. Is that simply a majority of the Supreme Court that would vote to approve that? And would that then result in any changes needing to be put forward in the budget the legislature is going to pass? Or is it flexible enough to where the court could, within the current budget, reallocate that money?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, that is quite hypothetical, and I think the question is if the court just decided to hire a couple more district court judges unrelated to this bill or anything else to handle its caseload, we would, I believe, in all likelihood, need to seek a budgetary increase for because those would be two just brand new positions, and we would probably need to include, I mean, we would need to include that in our budget request as an increment for the next year.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Follow up. And was it just the majority of the Supreme Court that is the authority, or is there some higher threshold required to change that rule?
Through the chair, the rules, as the chair did say, are changed often. We have rules committees in all these different areas, and the rules attorney brings recommendations from committees and other things to the Supreme Court on about a monthly basis, and they vote as to whether to adopt the rule change or to do something else with the rules.
I don't see any other questions, so what I'm going to go ahead and do is move on to public testimony. If you are on the phone, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone so we can clearly understand you. And I'll first open public testimony and ask if there is anyone in the room or online wishing to testify as to House Bill 77. Hearing and seeing no one, I'll ask if there's anyone online. I don't see anyone on the screen. Nobody on the screen either. And hearing and seeing, knowing that this is a testimony, I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any further questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we are going to hold this bill for further review. And that review will be relatively short, I would note. We are going to now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Friday, March 15 at 1:30 p.m., as previously published, following the Law Finance Subcommittee meeting, which I'm not sure when it's going to start. So pay attention to the news from the Law Finance Subcommittee Chair. If anyone is considering offering an amendment to House Bill 77, the bill we just heard, please let my office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday. For new members of the committee, we hold tight to those deadlines, and we want them transmitted electronically. Walking into the office doesn't count. It needs to be sent electronically. If you want to bring a courtesy copy, that's okay. But you need to send it to my office at the Rules Committee email address. To the Judiciary, I'm sorry, I'm getting my committees confused. At the Judiciary Committee email address, which you all should have. And with that, we will stand adjourned. It is now 2:41 p.m.